Hi, I'm Yaakov Katz, and welcome to the Jewish People Policy Institute's Insight and Analysis of the State of Affairs in Israel and the Jewish World. On today's episode, we're going to take a look at the situation on college campuses in the United States. To do that, I spoke with Dr. Michal Biton, a researcher at NYU, the Rosh Kehilah spiritual leader of the downtown Minyan in New York, and one of the more outspoken and passionate speakers in defense today of Israel across college campuses. You might have seen her speak at that massive rally a few months ago in Washington, D.C. I then catch up with two of my JPPI colleagues, Professor Michal Bar-Asher Siegel, who I actually spoke to as she is visiting Penn under her hat as the vice president of Ben-Gurion University, as well as with Noah Slepkov, to look at how Israeli policies are affecting the conversation at colleges across America. Here we go. Michal, thank you so much for joining the JPPI podcast. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you've been, I have to say, you know, there's so much out there and there's so much to watch and so much to read, but I've seen a couple of videos of you speaking at the DC rally, that massive one that brought hundreds of thousands of people, and just also like little gatherings. I don't know if they were at Union Square, Washington Square, wherever they might've been, or just near NYU, really just galvanizing in a passionate way, the Jewish kids on campus to feel proud to stand up and not to be ashamed, despite all these stories that we're hearing of people who are hiding the Magen David or taking off their kippah on campus. Or on this episode, where later I'll be joined by two of our fellows. One of them is Michal Bar-Asher Siegel, who is currently, when I spoke with her, she's at Penn on a trip, and they had assigned security to her and other academics who had come with her from Ben-Gurion University. So maybe just walk me through a bit, A, what brought out this passionate response on your part, and B, how bad is it from what you see, you know, at your perch at NYU? How bad is the situation?
Sure. So I'll start the first question. I think, what brings out the passion? I think I am convinced that we are right now in an existential moment for the Jewish people, not only in Israel, but around the world. So I think if there's a moment to be passionate and to speak up, it is now. And for us here in America, there's a lot of heartbreak just seeing, our extended family in Israel, and really just seeing a lot of hatred around the world. So I think everybody should be passionate and everybody should be really speaking up right now. There's no other time to put everything on the table to fight for our safe existence around the world. In terms of campuses, I would say that generally it's important for anybody who wants to be helpful. So to be helpful, we have to diagnose carefully, right? We don't want to just be reactive and only see what's happening like on Instagram, right? So having said that, I think campuses are very different and every campus has a life of their own. And the situation for college students and for university professors, like you just mentioned, on a given campus will depend a lot on how strong the Jewish community is on the campus, how strong is the administration, and how strong are the, I'm not gonna call them pro-Palestinian, I'll say pro-Hamas voices on campus. So there are some campuses where I've met students who are like really, really feeling totally alone and besieged. And there are campuses where I've met students who feel really supported and they feel like they're fighting right now. And there's campuses where I've met both types of students because they're in different positions in that campus. So it's important for me to name this because I speak with so many students. It's important for me to name to any external stakeholders that I think what we have to do right now is be incredibly strategic and just do a lot of initial legwork to try to figure out like what's happening in this campus, how can I be helpful in this particular situation?
And like to give me an example, you know, if a college campus, let's say where kids are feeling unsafe and you know, we just saw, I think I read somewhere, 9 students went to Capitol Hill, gave testimony again about the feelings of anti-Semitism. We, of course, everyone remembers what happened with the 3 university presidents who testified before Congress. 2 of them then stepped down from Harvard and Penn. When there is that situation on campus, what can be done to reinvigorate or to give the Jewish students this feeling that they are safe and that people have their back?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things. One of them is to it sounds very simplistic because it is simple. I don't feel like I have something that is too revelatory here. But 2 nights ago, I did like an event at NYU, and I spoke with some students afterwards from neighboring schools, and some of them were describing some really bad situations. So I spoke to them. I asked them, "Who's your support system? Who's the rabbi there? Who's the Hillel professional? Here are some numbers that you can call. Here's my number. You call me whenever you need to. Do you have a place to go for Shabbat dinner? Because you don't just need to fight. You need to have a place where you get nourishment and you get, you know, that feeling of support. Here's some legal resources." So all of those things are helpful, and all of these things are incredibly specific to a particular campus. I know I said that before, and I sound like a broken record, but there is no one size fits all kind of solution to make things work. So that's number one. Meet the students who are struggling, sit with them, do a deep dive. Do you have your support? What support do you need? What does it mean to be strategic right now? Because we don't want to be reactive. This is not going to go away in a week or two. This is here to stay. So if it's here to stay, we have to be smart and strategic. The second thing I would say, Yaakov, is that I think that we need to also help students be resilient. There is a culture in a lot of liberal spaces that really center feelings of trauma and vulnerability and fragility. And I am really convinced that part of what we need to do is, yes, give resources to students, but also help students know that they are strong, they are resilient, and they have the kind of strength that we didn't, that many of us maybe didn't think we had that. And that there are certain things that we can take on and that we have to be ready to fight, because these environments, if they're not going to treat microaggressions towards Jewish students and Zionist students the way they treat them to other groups. So part of our response right now needs to be to stand up, to have a thick skin. I often say we have to learn from Israelis, right? The way that Israelis have risen up and fought. And we have to be really ready to take this on.
I read the piece that you recently wrote for Times of Israel just before Purim, about the current situation, Israel's war against Hamas, what's happening also with American Jewry, and the comparison and the question that you asked, is America the Shushan of in 2024? Basically, are Jews vulnerable today like they were back then, where they're at risk of I don't want to say use harsh words, annihilation or genocide, but in a risk in a grave manner that hasn't been the way things were in the past. There was recently the piece in the Atlantic of where we saw how the end of the golden age of American Jewry. So, is America Shushan?
Well, as I wrote in that piece, I don't think so. I think thank God for now, we are not in a place where the government and the institutional and structural powers have turned against Jews. We still live, thank God, in a liberal democracy where there is the rule of law and where minorities are protected. And we see in polls that still the majority of Americans are philo-Semites, if I'm saying it right. They support Jews, they support Israel as well. What I tried to actually tease out there, without diminishing the rise of like a kind of like racial anti-Semitism in which there's like swastikas, you know, and Jews are just being targeted, without diminishing that, I do think that to me the biggest or the main danger that I'm thinking about is what I termed the Hanukkah danger, which is when there is a war against a certain type of Judaism more than against Jews. So Hanukkah, if all the Jews would have agreed to become Hellenized, right? You know, the Greeks wouldn't have waged war against them. The Greeks wanted to wage war against a particular Judaism. In liberal America today, not everybody, but in many, many sides of knowledge and cultural production amongst many elites, there is increasingly a war against a certain ethnic Judaism that has solidarity with Jews in Israel and that has a connection to Israel, the land of Israel, the state of Israel, Jews living there. And part of what that war, the way that it plays out, is this systematic attempts to drive pro-Israel and Zionist Jews underground and to make not just Israel, but any pro-Israel or Zionist sentiment become like pariah. You can't mention it out loud. So to me, that is really, it's really, really important to focus on this danger and to try to figure out what does it mean to resist the very real pressure to go underground and the very real pressure to disavow this kind of Judaism as the price of acceptance in liberal society.
I mean, is part of the concern, I wonder, that you're going to have these let's say college campuses, but it could happen elsewhere, of where Jews who feel under siege and under attack in a way that they weren't before will not only hide Judaism, but want to walk away from Judaism, and that won't want to be part of this.
Yeah, I mean that's part of it. I think I had a couple of things that were driving me to write that piece. One is that I think even those who don't want to walk away from Judaism might feel a tremendous amount of pressure just to hide it. And I think many of us, there's a very understandable and logical reaction to intimidation, which is to go underground. You know what I mean? So, and I think we need to fight that. I think we don't have to be, you know, to have illusions of our safety. We have to be careful, but we also need to figure out what does it mean to actually say this is a war, and the war is over the public square in America, and whether my form of Judaism will be welcomed in it. The other concern that was animating me, and you spoke about campuses before, I'll tell you, I was at a certain campus, a very prominent campus. I don't want to say the name, but a couple of weeks ago, speaking to students there, and I spoke to about 30 students who are pro-Israel in this campus. And when I was trying to hear from them what is hardest about this moment and about fighting the pressure to go underground as pro-Israel students, their immediate answer was that according to their estimates, 30% of those who identify as Jewish in any way on their campus are JVP adjacent. Okay, so imagine if you are a student on campus trying to say that a certain form of anti-Zionism is anti-Semitic, and 30% of the Jewish students' population are aligned with that kind of
I'm saying
anti-Zionism.
the opposite, JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace, right? So very
Yeah.
far left extremist organization.
I mean, JVP right now is like clearly outside the consensus of the Jewish community. There's like no question about it. It's like, you know,
You're saying it gives legitimacy to the anti-Israel or pro-Hamas organization. They say, what do you mean? There are Jews who stand
it's
with
not just that
us.
it gives them legitimacy, it makes the job of the Jewish students who are trying to advocate for themselves, it makes it really, really hard. Because if you're trying to say, listen to what I'm saying as a Jewish student and why, you know, saying that support that Zionism is racism, is anti-Semitic, for example, the second that you have a large segment of your campus community on the other side, you lose a lot of your tools to be able to fight back. And part of the reason that it's important for me to actually say we need to diagnose carefully what we're facing here is to understand that when there is a war against Judaism, as opposed to Jews, right? So when it's Judaism that's being targeted, in this case, a Zionist ethnic Judaism, there are always and historically have always been Jews who decided to repudiate their Judaism as the price of acceptance. I don't know if I'm making sense right now, but basically, think about like,
I mean, historically, I get it. You go back to, I don't know, the times that the Greeks or the Romans ruled Israel. There were the Hellenism and Jews who decided to embrace that and walk away from the religion.
not just walk away from the religion, many of them became the chief persecutors of their former co-religionists. We have so many examples of that, you know, in so many times. And I think it's important for us to understand whenever there is a war against our Judaism, there are going to be a significant number of Jews who will turn their backs on the Jewish community and who will join in this kind of effort to drive Judaism underground. And we need to figure out what are the tools, what is the strategy. Again, we cannot be reactionary. I get a little bit frustrated, I'll be honest with you right now. Sometimes I get frustrated because I think that for very understandable reason, we just want to be anxious and outraged all the time. But when outraged,
Right. Oh, we're Jewish, so we are anxious all the
well,
time.
maybe
Yes.
Ashkenazi Jews, but
I'm sorry, you're Sephardic. I
just kidding. I'm just
apologize.
kidding.
Yes.
No, but I am outraged too. But I think that we are a small people, and we have a limited amount of resources. And if we are driven by outrage, we are not going to be strategic. So that's partially why I feel it's it's part of my responsibility to tell stakeholders, you want to help on campus, for example, understand each campus in its own terms, understand the war being waged there. Who are your allies? What is your vision of what it means to win?
Yeah.
Like, it requires real strategy, and it requires to say, it's not going to get fixed in like a week or two. It's not about one campus event. It's a war. You know what I mean? It takes real strategy.
I mean, you know, what you're saying kind of rings a bell for me to some extent. You know, a lot of groups that I've met with and all these solidarity missions that come to Israel, and everyone wants to know from every federation, wherever they might come, or every synagogue, what can we do? You know, what should ever, you know, what should we be doing in America or some other diaspora community? And I don't tell people how to spend their money and what organizations to give to, but the problem that I often find is just the ignorance and lack of education. And I, you know, before we also, one thing that, again, but I'm more of an outsider, is before we start to preach to the non-Jews of how they should look at Israel, do their kids have the knowledge and the skills and the information and the context? And I think that they don't, right? You know, if you go to day school, maybe a little more than a Jewish kid who doesn't, but even Jewish kids in day school aren't getting that type of foundation to be able to counter what you're describing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree we have a crisis of education. I'm also a little bit, part of the challenge though, this is like a challenge that I'm, the we're not the only ones who face this. You know, many, all across the world we're facing it, that education and knowledge are not necessarily good tools to fight in a misinformation age. You know, when you're trying to change the views of Gen Z Americans, let's say. And many of them, their brains are like increasingly primed to like a TikTok kind of like information delivery.
Yeah.
So I agree with you about the need of education, even as I think that we are in a really complicated time and we need to figure out what it means to fight multiple battles, to educate our community, to educate outside of our community. And it's not just education, it's public relations, it's information warfare. It's like really taking this seriously, and trying to figure it out. I'll say, by the way, I'm assuming, you know, there's listeners from like all over the world, like, you know, in Israel, America, who are listening. I will say that I have been speaking this week and last week increasingly. I'm just hearing from more and more American Jews who are struggling. They're struggling with knowing that they support Israel's just war against Hamas. They're struggling taking that into account, knowing there's so much anti-Semitism. And they're struggling because they don't always feel like the government of Israel is taking seriously what it means to not just wage a war and wage a war morally, but also wage a war that communicates that we are doing so to the rest of the world. So there is a real, I think, crisis in not taking seriously that, in the same way the IDF is small compared to like other countries in terms of like the, you know, the countries that surround Israel, but they're strategic and they're smart. And it's like, we need to have something similar when it comes to real information and communication technology.
Information warfare is another one of the fronts of the battle. And unfortunately in Israel, we still do not take that as serious as we should. But Michal, I want to thank you very much for joining us and giving us your insight. Dr. Michal Biton, it was a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank
Thanks
you
for
so
having
much.
Me.
So Michal and Noah, it's great to have both of you with us. Michal, I want to start with you. We're catching up while you were at Penn University. And it's an interesting place to be at, considering that it wasn't that long ago that the president of Penn, Liz McGill, was forced or compelled or felt the need to resign after that disastrous hearing before Congress where she had the smirk on her face for most of the time and was being asked by Representative Stefanik, we're not going to get into the politics of all of it, about anti-Semitism, calls for genocide against Israel. And I'm just curious, and about the whole, yeah, it depends on the context answer, what's the mood like there now? So Noah, I mean, this sliver of hope that Michal is talking about, and I do want to get back to that in a moment to Michal, but I think, from hearing this, the images that we Israelis are seeing, right, are very different, and the reports that we're getting of what's happening on college campuses are very different. And it seems as if these have become places of where anti-Semitism is thriving.
Yeah, I mean, this is a classic example of a selection bias. You only hear about the bad examples of the outlying incidents. I can give you an example. When I was working doing Israel advocacy at the University of Western Ontario, there was like a swastika in the bathroom of the library or something. And like, of course, if like this was in the news, Canadian University finds swastika graffiti, it would like blow up and people would start complaining that it was like, oh, the school is not friendly to Jews. There's anti-Semitism on the campus. But it's like one person high in the library doodling. And like, we don't need to make it into like a big national anti-Semitic emergency. So I think that, of course, there are egregious violations of people's rights, of outright anti-Semitism taking place across campuses in North America, I'm sure also in other places in the world. But these are incidences are not representative of what's going on. I'm sure most students can go to campus and not be bombarded with direct attacks of anti-Semitism. That's not to say they won't see people protesting the situation in Israel. But somebody protesting the situation in Israel is not necessarily anti-Semitic. It's a slippery slope, of course, and I'm sure some protests could be classified as anti-Semitic, while others are not.
So, Michal, I mean, you're on this tour, you're meeting with the new president and the provost and going to other colleges, and your job as vice president, or VP, as we like to call it, of Ben Gurion University, is that global engagement. Have you sensed a change in the dynamic of not only the acceptance of you Israeli academics overseas, but also of, you mentioned Penn coming here with their solidarity mission, very nice, but in general, has the mood changed, or are we telling ourselves stories? Wow. So people who are listening, don't share that Michal said Ben. Yes. Well, I mean, also this week was not a good week in that sense. No, the killing of the aid workers in Gaza and mistaken strike against some vehicle, I think, in Deir al-Balah, the I forget the name of the organization, the Kitchen,
World Kitchen.
Yeah, organization. And, you know, also just the feeling that things seem to be stuck on the ground, but then also the Shifa Hospital images that come out. And while to me it seems definitely legitimate what the IDF did there, when you look at the before and after pictures of what Shifa looked like before and what Shifa looks like now, these are going to be difficult conversations to have around the world. And one thing about PR always, which I try to remind people, is no matter how good the PR is, it can't cover up for bad policies, right? And when things that are bad do happen.
I don't know. I mean, I'm watching Channel 12, and they're showing images.
You look even, Noah, you look even yesterday at the homepage of the New York Times. The main story is this video showing the before and after of Shifa Hospital. You didn't see that in mainstream Israeli websites, right? We don't show those things. And you know what?
Yeah, but yeah, but I mean, I think you have Israelis who are fighting in Gaza who are well aware of what's taking place there. And I mean, for example, soldiers that go into Gaza, they see that, you know, almost every house has like a map of all of Israel that, you know, that it on their walls. And I think your point about they don't see the whole story too, I think that is essential here, that while we might not see the specifics of the destruction that you're talking about, first of all, we are on Telegram. The all the channels on Telegram that are full, you can see, like, they'll post a picture of like a hostage video that will show, you know, graphic images, and they'll have like, you know, half likes and half like sad, because half are Arab and half are Israelis who are reacting to these images on Telegram. And I think that ultimately what bothers me the most about the discord in America is that they don't own the war. The war against Israel is a war of choice. Hamas decided to start this war, and Hamas is still not agreeing to the conditions to end the war. They could agree to the terms that Israel lays out to stop the fighting, and they choose not to. And that, I think, is critical, and that's not something that that people really fully understand. That,
well, I mean, I think that part of what the divide here also is that, and this is always going to be the case, right? Is Israelis see what they see, and we still feel the aftermath of October 7th and the fact that hostages are being held there. And, you know, the only reason, for example, let's also be honest for a moment, the only reason that these aid workers and this story grabbed headlines and got President Biden to speak out in, you know, what seemed like rage yesterday about the killing of these people is because they're not Palestinian. And had they been Palestinian, it would have been another event that would have kind of just slipped under the radar.
They're dual, a lot of them, from what I understand, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, some of them have dual citizenship, which doesn't change the situation. The innocent lives lost, no matter what their nationality are, is terrible.
No, but it does grab attention more. And I think that this is part of the, again,
But in this case, Israel admitted we made a mistake. This was unintentional, but it was us. It wasn't like the time that everyone said, oh, Israel just killed 500.
No, I'm not, by the way.
That's one of the.
Don't get me wrong. War is terrible. Mistakes happen in war. Sadly, this is apparently, we'll find out what the investigation discovers. Hopefully it was a mistake and not intentional. But Michal, I want to get back to you. This divide, though, between the way we Israelis are looking at this war and the way it's being looked at, even by people who are friends of ours, who you're meeting, who are giving you security at Penn, it's very different.
Right. No, but Michal, I think ultimately the point here is that you have Hamas, which his goal in this war is the elimination of Israel. They do not want Israel to exist. This is what they're fighting for. And as long as this is their goal, then this is the war that's taking place. And that's why this is a war of choice. They're deciding. Oh, that's not true. That's exactly the point in America. That's where you're wrong. This is where you're wrong. People in America, this is why you're having the conversation about whether or not Israel has a right to exist, because Hamas is fighting for Israel not to exist. And that is where the discord is. So the fact that you're having the conversation, does Israel have a right to exist, is the point. Maybe Hamas's war is just because Israel doesn't have a right to exist. Well, I mean, this is. No, but just right.
Well,
But just one last point. One last
yeah.
point. You didn't get the full point. You didn't get the full picture in what America did in World War II. You didn't get the full picture in World War I. You didn't get the full picture in the Vietnam War.
Can I tell you something about
You're
that
never gonna.
claim?
It's the
Is that
yeah.
it doesn't, no, but you know what? It doesn't really make a difference, because at the end of the day, and here I'll have to agree with Michal, is that the Israeli people are not asking tough questions. And I think, you know, you see that in the media coverage, you see that in the conversations that we're having, you see that in the hoorah behind everything that the army says, you see that in the way that every statement that the army puts out, it's as if it's the Holy Grail. And there's very little inquisitive investigations. I mean, when was the last time, let's be honest, when was the last time one of us read a real investigative report in one of the Israeli media that wasn't something that was given to them? You know, they call it an exclusive, but yeah,
I
it's an
mean,
exclusive interview with some officer that the IDF has anyhow given you. We don't have that today in
I
Israel.
don't have I don't see investigative reporting in the Israeli media in general,
Right.
like no
Okay.
offense.
So then there you go. So
So
we're not, and we're
if
not asking the right questions of our leadership. We're not asking the right questions about what's happening.
right, but
But
this is a
here's one
war
thing.
that's not war. Wars, listen, when Russia
A
was
war, no, a
attacked.
war is the time that you definitely need to do that, because these are the policies that are being done in the in these are there's action that's being taken
I
by.
agree with you that the government is not effective, and it would be better if there was some type of election sooner than later. There's no doubt about that. And all
That
your
we'll
questions.
have to get to another time about the election. But for now, I want to thank Noah and Michal and everyone who joined us. You can catch us next Monday for another episode of the JPPI Inside Analysis. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Shabbat shalom, Michal. Stay safe with your security over there at Penn.